We'll now come to order to let the record reflect that Representative Newman, Representative Salmon, Co-Chair Thomas, and Co-Chair Olson are all in attendance. We've got two items on the agenda today. The first one will be House Bill 391. Representative Stoltz, good morning.
Thank you, Co-Chairman Olson and Thomas. I appreciate you prioritizing this bill for scheduling. It's born out of as a member that I still live on the same street I grew up on, much like the chairman from Haines. So I talk to a lot of people I've known all my life and know how older people in my community, as well as young families that are trying to stay in the community, are coping with the increasing costs of home ownership. And I've brought, which I'll acknowledge, is admittedly a blunt instrument, and will probably need fine tuning through the expertise of this committee and others outside. But it's certainly my attempt to try to bring forward a vehicle to address the rising escalation in property taxes through one side of it. Obviously, it's not the property tax mill rate side, but the assessment side. Many of the people I know, including myself, have no desire to sell their home, and they're very cautious people, and they're not borrowing on their home. So it's really just an increased cost of the privilege of living in your home as your assessments skyrocket. And I'm not suggesting that their assessments are always out of line. They probably are a somewhat accurate reflection of what the increased property values are. But I think it's within the power of the legislature to address that function of the escalating cost of owning one's home. Many of our larger municipalities, they're the sole taxpayer for paying for a broad array of government services, and the pressure is increasing. There are obviously some serious questions on how this affects the school contribution. And I'll admit a mistake on my part. I had also meant to include in this proposed statute that at the point of sale there's an automatic reassessment ability. So that was a flaw on my part, which I apologize, committee. That was my intent, to having the ability to reassess upon major improvements and on point of sale. And given that if this the committee decides to move this vehicle forward, those are certainly areas I would hope that could be addressed. And I'm sure you're going to see hear a lot of critiques about the bill, and some are certainly philosophical, and some are going to be of a technical nature, and I'll acknowledge some of those. But this is one of those bills that's born out of some degree of frustration. When I talk to, even with the senior property tax exemption, some older people that have lived in my community since the late 40s, early 50s are struggling to stay in their home. They don't want to subdivide or sell. They want to just live out their remaining years on the property that they've raised their kids and grandkids on. And certainly the dynamic increasing property taxes, that's rolled into those that have a mortgage. That's part of that payment. And we have state agencies, AHFC and others, that endeavor to try to knock down $100 on they'll tell you, if we can knock down that $100 on a payment, you get qualification. A family that's on the margin. In the same dynamic, you'll find out their property taxes go up that much, and you eradicate that. So it's really born about it from a deep philosophy that I want people to be able to afford homes and be able to live in their homes. And I acknowledge there's technical flaws, or there's where different parts of statute might be rubbing up against each other, the true assessed value, but I'll call it right now a blunt instrument to try to bring the point home, but with the acknowledgement that it needs work, and I am ready to spend as much time along with my staff both during and outside of committee process. So with that, I thank the members.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair Alston. Representative Stoltz, you alluded to a point of sale, possibly a conceptual amendment. So you're looking for something like prior to point of sale, real estate property shall be reevaluated?
Or you know, Representative Newman, Chairman, I think that's the appropriate point. I think the lending communities and the municipalities certainly have a direction of what the most appropriate language was. Obviously, it's not something I want to address on the fly. It's a serious state policy, but it was when a property is resold that the city would have another bite at reassessing it and catching up with. That would be my intent.
Follow up.
Thank you, Chair. When Representative Stoltz is you're a member of Finance, and that's where this bill is headed. So I guess maybe before it gets there, unless this committee wants to do something.
Well,
it's not our intent to move it out today.
And
we're going to be taking testimony.
This is such serious policy. I want this to go through a not necessarily slow but a deliberative process.
Well, I think it warrants the full attention of the full committee also.
Correct. And I think this is enough of an important policy issue that a lot of Alaskans have expressed interest in. I'm just grateful for this first entree into the issue.
Well, I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative Ledoux. Good morning, Representative Ledoux.
Good morning.
Any other questions for Representative?
I have one.
Fire away.
Thank you, Co-Chair. The primary goal or aim for this bill is that primarily the seniors, you think, or is that who you really want to help? Or I think in a growing community, people move there for a reason. At least if I was young, I'd want the assessed values to go up, but if I'm at the other end, I don't want them to go up faster. Is this more for the seniors?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's been one of the more vocal groups, and that's and I have to admit that people I know in my community, people that are being feel they're being squeezed out of their ability to spend their remaining days. That's even with the property tax exemption. Just property values are escalating so fast. But I think it's also the whole issue of property tax increases. It affects the ability of young people to even enter the market. So I think it hits on both ends. But to admit, I've heard more from the senior committee on this. I didn't solicit comments from them, but they sure have come out. I understand they've been the most vocal in providing correspondence of those that are in favor of it.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I think we'll open it up to the people that are dialing in, and we'll start out with Ron Long and Seward. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for this opportunity to testify. And just in case you and some of the others might recognize me in some other venue, I need to tell you that the opinion expressed here is just my own and not intended to represent anybody else.
So you're not calling in as a representative of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly?
Nope, just a citizen, taxpayer, and homeowner. But I did look at this a little askance and hope that if it does move out of this committee, that it needs some serious work. This, as the sponsor has alluded to, really turns on its head the state's mandate that local governments assess properties at their full and true value, and there's some pretty good reasons for that, so we don't reward our friends and punish our enemies, I suppose, among other things. But it also fails to recognize the reality of the market. Real estate, either commercial or residential, has increased in value rather rapidly lately. And that's a real market force that's outside the control of local or state government, but it is real at the bank. And as the assessed value or the real value of property increases, so does people's wealth. So then it's not the assessment that taxpayers need fear, but the levy. So merely tinkering with how much government can assess, then just defaults it back to the levy amount. So I suppose if you really wanted to constrain local government and deny them the ability to tax sufficiently to provide necessary services, you'd also limit the amount that the levy could increase and put a cap on that. Really, for those younger and middle-aged families, this does amount to an instrument that's negotiable at the bank if they need to go and leverage that increase in value to put the kids through college or to take a vacation or to help out their parents. It turns into real dollars. The senior exemption, as you know, in some municipalities, all senior properties are exempt beyond the $150,000 state mandate. One thing that could really provide relief for the local governments and for the taxpayers that are calling for it would be for the state to live up to its end of the bargain to reimburse the municipalities for the revenue not seen through that mandated exemption. It also doesn't recognize the different assessment methods, among them the recognized income method, particularly for commercial properties. And I don't know if that would be something that I heard the sponsor say he would meant to include that on the sale, but there are some real examples out there, even in some of the more remote districts where a business property assessed under the income approach purely through external forces outside their control either goes way up, in which case they wouldn't pay more under this scenario, more than 2%, or goes way down, in which case they would certainly pay less. It tends to further put local governments behind the eight ball, and it puts an inequality amongst the taxpayers. If people living in a residential district or commercial properties that appreciate in value rapidly are given basically a free ride, then those whose properties don't, i.e. the ones that need the help most, bear a disproportionate burden of the taxes necessary to support services that are delivered to everybody. So there's a lot of work to be done. I appreciate the intent to provide local tax relief, and as local government officials, I believe most of them are doing the very best they can. Given the constraints that are given to us from the state, but I believe more real property tax relief could be found in the form of a community dividend and trusting your local governments, at least to some degree, to live up to the state mandates that we're required to do in the methods that we find works best for us at the local level. Thank you.
Ron, would you take one question?
Sure.
How much are you losing on the senior exemption per year?
A little over $2.5 million.
Representative Ledoux?
Did I understand you to say correctly that if this bill were passed, that it would be more difficult for people to get loans for high values on their homes?
No, ma'am, Mr. Chairman, Madam Ledoux, the lenders wouldn't make a bit of difference to the lenders. I merely pointed out to illustrate that the increase in assessed value is only reflective of the true market forces. So they can get the loan because the property is truly worth more. We just couldn't tax it.
Thank you.
Representative Salmon.
Yes, you brought the idea of business taxes and residential tax. Do you think there should be a difference?
Well, gee, I don't know. To tell you the truth, we do tax residential and commercial properties at the same mill rate. The methodology to arrive at the assessed value is sometimes different, as we described under the market approach or an income approach or a sales approach. There may be, I'm reluctantly going to say right now that probably not, because we're taxing the structure and not the earning potential of the business, unlike, say, oil royalty taxes or that sort of thing from the state. So that's a little bit outside my area of expertise. I'm sorry I couldn't give you a better answer.
I'd like the record to reflect that we've been joined by Representative Sisna or Representative Thomas.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You made a comment that some cities give higher exemptions than the state law requires or gives. Do you know who that is? Which communities or municipalities or boroughs?
The Kenai Peninsula Borough currently exempts all senior and disabled veterans from property tax.
Which one?
Kenai Peninsula Borough.
Whoa, no wonder you get my borough. Trouble. No wonder you have trouble.
Representative Salmon.
I have another question. Say we get a property that's been assessed by the municipality, and we get a higher cost value, then when we sell the property, we're at a lower cost value. Should we get the difference? Should
sure.
Should the buyer get the difference?
Well, if I don't know about the, you know, the buyer and seller, but if it sells for lower than it was assessed at, then we've done a bad job of assessing it first. We need to re-look at that methodology, and we certainly shouldn't be taxing them beyond what the property is actually worth. And you know, there's certainly appeals to that process, and every time that anyone feels that they've been taxed or their property has been assessed too high, they are welcome to appeal it. And in our case, at least, out of several hundred appeals filed yearly, only a dozen or dozen and a half finally make it to the hearing process. All are resolved peacefully before that.
Any other questions for Mr. Long? Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, sir.
Next up will be John Holst from Sitka.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill. I'll be very brief. I think most of the important items that I wanted to talk about were covered by the previous speaker. You know, it just seems like a couple years ago that we voted on this issue, and it was a vote that went down 75-25 across the state because people recognized, the electorate was smart enough to recognize that the inequities created by this sort of a change would just be so far-reaching and would be a difficult to unravel in the future. And so I think it was rejected very clearly, and I'm a little surprised to see it come back. I think the impacts on school funding, the impacts on school funding is one that really is troubling to me, especially for those communities who are operating at the cap. And at the cap, the it's impossible to be increasing any budgeted amounts for the school district, and this would further exacerbate that. I think if you're looking for solutions, you know, and I'm a 60-something guy and retired, and I have a home that's being taxed, and I'm not yet falling under that exemption, the $150,000. But if you want to tinker with this and try to help people who have difficulty, I think that area of the exemption is probably the place to do it, and do it in a way in which you're actually giving the money from the legislature to the communities to offset that. What I really see at this as doing, this is an unfunded mandate. It is something that our state legislature is deciding for local municipalities, and I think that that's just plain wrong. I think you ought to allow that those decisions to be made locally, and if you wish to give a break to people with their homes, then why not increase the $150,000 exemption and give that money to the municipality so that they can pass on that benefit. I just want to reiterate, I am a member of the City and Borough Assembly of Sitka. However, I'm speaking today solely as an individual, and my comments should be reflected that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Holst? Representative Sisna.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I apologize for not being here at the beginning and having missed a fair amount, probably, of the testimony. I have before me 391, and it's one page. Is that right? So, Mr. Chair, if I might ask Representative Stoltz, one of the things I guess concerns me is that I've been around to a lot of communities, talked to a lot of city managers and mayors and that kind of thing, and what I've been struck with is the differences of communities and kind of the different challenges that are being met. Most of them are pretty sensitive about trying to keep people in the community because their survival depends upon people staying. And it looks to me as if this is kind of just, this would apply to all communities, no exceptions, and that doesn't reflect the kind of the differences between communities. What was your feeling about that?
Well, Chairman, I haven't had the extensive travels. I'm not on the health caucus, so I haven't been around the state like you have. I recognize there are differences, and certainly that Peninsula Borough, obviously, is through their local government, and that $2.5 million, I suspect, is well beyond what the $150,000 state mandated exemption would have. I think I started off my testimony in the time you weren't here is that I acknowledged some that work needs to be done on this. I don't know if I have the ability to go in the in-depth of the philosophical debate. You and I are often at different polarized ends on government issues, so I'm not sure I can get into a. I'll just acknowledge that there are some issues I want to fine-tune on this bill.
Any other questions for Mr. Holtz?
Or
do you want to follow up to?
Yeah, a little bit of a follow-up. It sounds as if I'm wealthy, and actually I'm not. All of my travel is on my own dime, and it's either on my bike or in my 85-year-old, or my 85, not my 85-year-old, my 85 Mercury. But anyway, and I don't know if this is a philosophical debate at all. I think it's just, in some cases, it might be a survival issue for a community.
And, Mr. Chairman, it's often a survival issue for the person struggling to live in their homes. And I as much as anybody, value that. I think a stable population makes for a more stable community. And whether it's young people or elderly people staying in a community, I know those are things I value in my community and I want to maintain. So.
Well, thank you, Mr. Holtz.
I actually had a question, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure.
Just there was an allusion alluding to the vote in 2000, and I just and I know it's also in the AML testimony that the voters have spoken on this by a percentage margin, so the legislature doesn't have its place in tinkering with this issue again. It's off the table. So I just want to know if that same standard also applies for anything using the dividend. I know AML, if they hold that same standard of holding the 1999 vote sacrosanct, and I just want to leave that on the table.
Okay, we're going to go to Kenai now. Shane Horan, please state your name and affiliation, Mr. Horan.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Shane Horan, and I'm the assessor for the Kenai Peninsula Borough and current president of the Alaska Association of Assessing Officers. This one-sentence bill, as proposed, could have major and far-reaching fundamental impacts on the taxing scheme, bonding, and school funding of all municipalities throughout the state. This bill would or should potentially lead to a substantial and significant rewrite of the full and true value assessment law as it currently exists in 2945.110. It would have far-reaching effects, as did Proposition 13 in California, or the Truth in Taxation legislation in the state of Utah. I would like to offer our association's assistance, participation, and aid in working with the legislature in a cooperative and constructive manner in the scripting and construction of legislation regarding this issue. And if I may, Mr. Chair, just 10 brief points that I observed in looking at this legislation that should be addressed or clarified. Certainly include what constitutes an improvement. Would that include a paint job, a new addition, new siding, et cetera? And what does go up 2%? Is this land, buildings, outbuildings? And if an improvement was made, would the total assessed value be brought up to current market value? I believe that remodeling or new home construction could be discouraged. And if the market value increases 20% in 4 years, and then goes down 2% in the fifth year, does the value stay at the same that fifth year, or can it still be increased 2% in that fifth year? Also, would House Bill 391 promote full disclosure of the sale at that point of sale that Mr. Stoltz had identified? And currently, it takes the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assessing Department about 5 years to complete a physical canvas and valuation of the whole Kenai Peninsula Borough. And then what cycle or at what point becomes the base year for House Bill 391? One thing I would like to share from our finance director, Craig Chapman, is that local funding for schools currently requires the municipalities to fund schools based on this full and true value. Also, I'd like to share the question, what does a 2% increase in value do to the municipality's ability to bond? And lastly, how would a municipality correct obvious errors in its assessment if the assessments are tied to only a 2% increase? For example, if it is found that a property should have been assessed at $200,000 but was only assessed at, say, $125,000, the equity issue is simply magnified. So with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Well, I certainly don't have any answers to those, but I bet Representative Stoltz might be able to take a few of them.
Well, I'll just call them, Mr. Chairman. I'll call those all good points, and I'd rather, you know, I spent a lot of time yesterday afternoon talking to the state assessor and going through some of the technical issues. I think that'll certainly be this committee's purview to address all of these, and we believe a lot of these points that have been brought up are very valid, and they deserve to be considered in the process if this committee decides to move out a bill. So,
Mr. Horan, if we have written testimony, if you could fax it to our office, we'll make sure all the committee members and Representative Stoltz gets it.
I'm glad to, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Mr. Horan?
I Representative have a question Ledoux. For Representative Stoltz. If you just had this bill without a cap on property tax rates, how would that accomplish what you're trying to accomplish?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ledoux, well, I think political pressure on the local levels, the voter always watches and has an ability in Anchorage and other venues. They have tax caps, and they the voter is a local public official is always skeptical about, they're very cautious about raising mill rates because the voter sees that and it's well publicized. There's creeps and often leaps in assessed values. So I think the concern is, well, if we put a governor on this aspect of the taxation, what's to stop a municipality from jacking up the property tax rates? I have a pretty good confidence in voter control there's a very clear understanding. And in a large number of the charters, if not a majority, voter requirement for voter approval of mill rate increases or tax increases, but the assessment is it's that thief in the night that steals away from people's that adds to their tax bill. And certainly diminishes their ability to live in their own homes. I'm hopeful that the pressures that we all know as elected officials that will be the prevailing force. That's been my experience that they're pretty effective.
Well, if there's no other questions for Mr. Horan, I think we're going to move on to Steve Van Zandt, State Assessor. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. My name is Steve Van Zandt. I'm the State Assessor with the Department of Commerce.
I believe most of the comments that I was going to make have been made by different individuals, including Mr. Horan. There are some points I would like to bring up just for informational purposes. One, Mr. Long stated that the Kenai senior citizen exemption is about $2.5 million. Actually, for 2005, it was $3.3 million, and that was just for the $150,000 exemption that exists now. I'd also like to point out for the committee's information that currently municipalities do have the authority to exempt over the $150,000 for senior citizens. Kenai Peninsula Borough is one of those that has done that. They totally exempt all personal property. There's no limitation on it. They've considered in the past limiting that to different amounts, but so far it hasn't been done. Other municipalities also have that opportunity. The also like to point out that I did get to talk with Representative Stoltz yesterday about this bill. One of the primary issues, I believe, is the fact that some individual assessments do increase more than the average. Last year, we had a statewide average of about 6.8% increase in property taxes statewide. Obviously, there are those individuals, several of them in the municipality of Anchorage, for example, that have hit the news where their tax bills are going up quite a bit more than that. In the majority of those are mistakes that have been made, and I think as Mr. Horan alluded to, some mistakes need to be corrected because they have been underassessed and they're being brought up to date. In other cases, the assessors made a mistake, the property was assumed to be something that it wasn't, and that mistake needs to be reeled back. So the average increase on these properties, while substantial, 6-7%, is not that much. It's those individuals that come up that over that average that make the news and that make us consider stuff like this. One thing that we have talked about, and just so the committee knows, I have sort of gathered a unofficial group of what I'd call experts in the tax field, and that's several assessors across the state plus several municipal attorneys, to work with me on trying to come up with some ideas that we might propose to different policymakers. So you'll have something to work with. From our point of view, as we see what the problems are, you know, one thing that has surfaced is the fact that municipalities probably need a tool that they can work with to assist with these huge increases in values. It's not the overall mill rate increases, and it's not the individual property tax that's going up so much. It's just some individuals that go up at a rapid amount. So a tool for a municipality where they could limit an increase to no more than the average increase over the municipality or something to that effect. That is one thing's come out. But we hope that over the upcoming months that we'll be able to have something that we can bring forward to somebody to say, here's some alternatives to look at. As we see it from a nonpartisan, non-issue, except we realize there is a problem with some of these. And so we want to bring that up. I think, Mr. Chairman, that's all I have, except I will answer questions with anything that may come up.
I guess the first question is, what kind of timeline are you on that?
Mr. Chairman, there is no timeline since it's a volunteer committee, and most of the assessment notices have gone out, so they're rather busy for the next month or so. I can't say that we'll have something in the next couple of months or anything like that, but we know that the issue is coming to a point where we're going to something is going to have to give, and so we thought we would try to get ahead of the curve. Obviously, we're not too much ahead of it, to see if we can come up with some ideas, but a timeline we just don't have yet.
Any questions for Mr. Van Zandt? Thank you very much. Marty McGee, Anchorage. Please state your name and affiliation.
Hello, my name is Marty McGee. I'm the assessor for the municipality of Anchorage. I've had conversations with the chief fiscal officer and the mayor with regard to this bill. I think the points made by the various speakers are all very valid, and I don't want to go through repeating those. I'm certainly in the front lines with regard to the issues that are being addressed here. A couple of things I'd like to point out. One of them is that the actual tax revenue is very much restricted in the municipality of Anchorage. by our municipal tax cap, and that with the reduction in state funding for local governments, Anchorage has had to go to the tax cap for several years in succession. So the idea that there somehow would not tax to the cap is not, in a decision on the part of the Assembly, is not a valid idea. They're forced into this position by the fiscal requirements of the municipality. We've done some research on the impact, looking historically at limiting the value growth, but having no limit on the mill rate, and we would be at a mill rate of about 19 mills in Anchorage if we had put this in place in 2000. So it just shifts the reason for the increase in tax. It doesn't limit the amount of growth in tax. It could potentially cause a limit on our ability to fund local services as we go forward with those kind of limitations in place. Now, Anchorage very much recognizes the disconnect that's going on in the community, where individual taxpayers are burdened by increasing valuations and increasing taxes. And we are very cognizant of the idea that the intent of this whole system of taxation is not to move people out of their homes or property, but to fund local government in some kind of equitable way. My comment is always, when I talk to the community, is that this tax, the property tax, is every bit as stable and predictable as the real estate market, because that's what it's built on. Anchorage would support, in principle, what's being proposed here, or some kind of limitation that recognizes this rapid rate of growth and development and value increase is putting a burden on people with fixed means, fixed incomes, in a way that wasn't intended and wasn't anticipated by the system. I'm very much a willing and an active participant in the IAAO and in the group that Steve Van Zandt is putting together. Anchorage is very much willing and wanting to participate in the discussions and the development of an idea which addresses the problem. I think that this bill, as proposed, is far too simplistic, and it definitely needs a stringent legal review with regard to its consistency to the other areas of state law. So we're very much encouraging that, but the concept and the problem that it attempts to address is the one that we acknowledge and would like to be part in finding a solution to. By the way, Anchorage is foregoing almost $19 million in taxes related to the senior and veterans program this year.
Is that capped at 150, or is it?
It's capped at 150 in Anchorage. There are almost 9,000 participants, and we expect that to grow on an almost exponential scale as we go forward in time.
Well, we're all getting older.
It's a reality, and it's becoming, you know, Anchorage is becoming the home of the seniors for the whole state. We certainly support the program, but something needs to be done, and because it's being borne by the remaining Anchorage taxpayers, the cost of the program is being borne by them.
Are there any questions for Mr. McGee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I believe that's the last of the people calling in. I think we'll open it up to people in the room, and it looks like Kevin Ritchie has volunteered to share his thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of Committee. My name is Kevin Ritchie with the Alaska Municipal League, and the points that Representative Stoltz brought up as things that should be solved is allowing old and young people to stay in their homes, attempting to address rises in property taxes, and addressing the fact that most people in their homes don't want to have to sell their homes due to taxes. And we agree that we have been trying to work with the legislature, and we hope to continue supporting those goals. Those are very laudable and reasonable goals. This is actually a really good forum to discuss those. In regard to the bill itself is part of, not the whole thing, but part of the proposition for tax cap issue, which was heavily rejected by voters. It's exactly the same portion of the bill that it was back then. Representative Stoltz makes the point, of course, that People change, things change. This is the same issue. It hasn't been brought back before the voters, but there was an indication in 2000 that this was not an acceptable issue. In terms of the basic problem with the construct of the bill, you've heard a lot about the basic inequity. And essentially, just using one point quickly, the taxes in Anchorage, if this were put in place in 2000, you'd need 19 mills today to provide enough money to pay for schools and so on. That would be a considerably heavier burden on business, potentially, or people whose property had not risen as fast. And so I think the construct of the bill is very seriously in question due to equity. The point that I want to make is I think municipalities would be very interested in working with the state assessor to try to find ways to reduce the mistakes that happen in assessments and to talk about tools that municipalities could use to reduce undue impact on individuals. And I think that makes sense. The point that I did want to make, which is the key one, is really looking at the issue of why property taxes went up. In the letter that we provided to you, we brought out a chart that we've been updating now for about 10 years in a row. And it's worth looking at in terms of how we got to where we are with property taxes. The top line of the chart goes up. That number is taken exactly out of the state assessor's annual Alaska taxable. So that is exactly the tax increases that have happened since 1986. And then the bottom line is the cumulative impacts of as the state was trimming its budget due to issues that have happened since 1986. What has happened exactly is revenue sharing started out with capital matching grants, and revenue sharing together has been cut from $161 million down to zero. There's a little bit of money for energy and so on, but approximately a very significant amount of money. Statewide, again, directly from the state assessor's Alaska taxable in 1985, the amount lost through the senior citizen property tax was $39 million, so very significant. 19 in Anchorage, about half, very significant amount of money everywhere. A number that's really hard to put a finger on is how much has the shift happened between school funding on the local level and state level over the past 15 years or so. And according to the records in the Department of Education, in 1986, municipalities, local taxpayers, paid 28% of the cost of schools. Now they pay 36%. That number's gone down a little bit with some of the extra money the state's put in, but still that increase of paying more for schools on the local level is about $88, $89 million, which is very significant. And then the other cuts, which is the hardest to pinpoint, we don't really have good numbers from the state. I took some numbers out of work done by the Department of Commerce. And again, there's some possible inequities there, but very significant decreases in a whole range of different programs that municipalities have taken advantage of, from community jails to alcohol and mental health treatment, community schools, and so on. And then the last one, just PERS increases. There was a 5% PERS increase the prior year to last year. It was worth about $20 million, and last year the state put in $20 million to offset that additional 5% increase. So just taking that one number. So anyway, if you add all those up, the cuts since 1986 have just about dead on equaled, and could be a little higher, could be a little lower, the cuts in property taxes. What's really needed right now, absolutely needed, for local property taxpayers, for communities to do better, would be a community dividend or some sharing of the oil revenues. And that would create property tax relief, essentially a permanent property tax relief for all taxpayers. And we think that's a very viable solution. So thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
Part of that $20 million that you're talking about didn't go to PERS and TERS, though. It went to property tax, depending on the city, if I'm not mistaken. I believe Anchorage did. Over half the cities used it for what it, other than what it, the intended purpose was.
That's a tough issue. A number of communities paid the 5% increase anyway, but the actual language in the bill, which is, you know, it's obviously not read by everybody, but the letter that went out from the PERS and TERS, or the Division of Retirement Benefits, and talking to the director, said, we're really trying to keep you from paying the 5% increase. And so they meant that to be either money that could go for schools or could go for something else in the community. 20 communities, looking at the long-term impacts, I think they were able to, and they did. Kenai and Soldotna were two that did.
Soldotna did.
They kept paying it anyway, assuming that they had enough money to buy down the debt. And so they made a good decision, but the real letter that went out said, we're trying to save you this cost increase so you can put the money to schools or other public services or tax relief or something. So it was a choice, and some people made one choice, some people made another.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Olson. I have several questions, Kevin, and a couple of comments. You know, I think when we look at the money for school funding, the last several years, school funding's gone up over more than 30%. So it's really turned the tide. It was flat for a while, but it's turned the tide on there. Also, in your school funding chart, does this, your chart here for school funding, does that include all the money that's spent on the schools, TERS, PERS? I mean, it's almost going to be $160 million a year for 20 years to cover the $6 billion loss. All the money that goes towards repairs in schools, there was over 70 projects on the school repair list. We funded over 40 of them. This legislative body is agreed to wipe out that list. Is that included in your school funding? And when we talk about, it seems when we talk about, you know, a stable revenue source that we keep hearing from the AML, does that include spending of the permanent fund dividend on state government?
Okay. Through the chair, the first thing is no. This only includes operations funds, and I think that it obviously is well recognized that the state, with the extra money that they've been putting into schools, has been turning around that relationship. The only thing I was mentioning is just the cost increases that local taxpayers have had to bear. The state has always been a very excellent partner in terms of making repairs and funding, sharing the funding in a consistent way with municipalities for new schools.
That's a very important part about what gets funded for schools, is making sure that those students are in a safe environment also.
Right. And through there, this is not a criticism of current or past legislatures. I think that you have to deal with issues as they come up. The only point I was trying to make is that there has been very significant pressures on communities in terms of the money that's been reduced over the past several years for whatever reason. Just simply, it's not, I mean, the taxes have been going up. We think it could be addressed by the legislature.
I think.
And your second point, I forgot your second point, I'm sorry.
The other question was, does the Alaska Municipal League favor spending permanent fund dividend monies to support state government?
Fund earnings.
Right. Through the chair, the AML does have that as one of the options that it's approved in its policy. We're also open to all other options that are on the table in the many bills that are now on the table for funding with community dividends.
Real quick, which would I assume you're speaking of the three different options is property taxes, income taxes, or spending a permanent fund dividend?
To the chair, the options would be sharing some of the oil revenue that the state currently gets, current revenue, the Amerada Hess funding, just putting it back in the general fund as a regular program, using part of the earnings reserve, using part of the constitutional budget reserve. You know, those are all options that are on the table at this point.
Representative Cisnett, looks like you have a question.
I have a lot of thoughts, none of which have gelled into a really good question.
Anybody else have any questions for Mr. Ritchie?
I just have one, Mr. Chairman. It usually takes a little longer than me still sitting at the table to be misquoted. I think I asked Alaska Municipal League in a in a generic fashion, if their position on respecting the votes of the people was going to be consistent on both measures, the 2000 vote and the 1999 vote. And then I just hear he said, well, the representative says people change and times change, you know, and it's, I didn't appreciate that reference, and especially as if it appears in the paper, you know. I think I said very clearly I was asking the AML if they were going to be consistent on respecting the vote of the people, and I don't know how that got characterized in the statement that he made, so I just wanted to clear that while he's sitting right here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, Representative Stoltz. I misspoke. I was saying that there, I mean, I was saying for myself personally that times change and people change, not you. I'm sorry.
But, Mr. Chairman, it was attributed to me, so I just, I'm very sensitive about what other people say comes out of my mouth, especially when it's so close to when I just said it.
Yeah, and again, I apologize. I did not intend to attribute that to you. I was just saying that in terms of the AML standpoint, we don't, our AML as a body has not taken a particular position on the meaning of that that vote. All I was remarking is that part this was part of the exact question in that vote.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Ritchie. We have a late arrival at the Valdez LIO, and I think we're going to bring her up for some comments. Lisa Bergen, please state your name and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Von Bergen, and I'm the Community and Economic Development Director for the City of Valdez, and I will be extraordinarily brief. The City of Valdez wholeheartedly concurs with all of the comments that you have heard from those that have provided testimony previously. I will only add that on February 21st, the City of Valdez passed Resolution 0616 opposing House Bill 391, specifically for all the reasons that have been mentioned earlier, dealing with the funding to the cap for schools, assessment contracts, the contradiction between this legislation and AS 2945-110, bonding ability, and the rising cost of service delivery in conjunction with basically two blocking our ability to generate revenues for our community. So with that, I'll end testimony, and I appreciate you allowing me to come in at the end of this.
Oh, no problem. Any questions for Ms. Von Bergen? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll just add that we'll be faxing a copy of the resolution down to the committees for your information.
Oh, excellent. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
At this point in time, is there anybody in the audience that wishes to make any comments? Well, I think at this point in time, we're going to close it to everybody except the committee, and I think it's our intention to not take any action, any further action today, and to move on to onto the next bill. Thank you very
thank
much,
you,
for
Chairman. Thank you for the dialogue.
Thank you.
So I think we'll House Bill 478. Good morning, Mr. Fisk.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Please state your name and affiliation.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Ian Fisk. I work for Representative Thomas. I believe you have a CS before you, Mr. Chairman.
I hope we do.
Yep.
Yep.
Would you like to bring up the... What's that? Oh, CS.
Chair? Long office, yes. Chair, I'd like to offer a CS for House Bill 478, version G, for testimony, House version G.
Yep. Mr. Fisk.
Thank you. First of all, let me start by saying that this is a companion bill to Senate Bill 291 by Senator Stedman, and I'll speak to the CS change. It's a small one as I get further into the bill. For about the past 15 years, the State Department of Transportation has been transferring harbor ownership from state ownership to the municipalities, and in so doing, they've also made grants to those municipalities in order to help them deal with some of the deferred maintenance issues that municipalities were given at the time of transfer. And the origin of this bill is really was brought forward by the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators, and it's also supported by a lot of municipal government officials who recognize that we have some real deferred maintenance needs for our harbors. It's a very reasonable 50-50 match grant proposal that is that they've brought forward. It's comprehensive, takes a coast-wide view, and it creates the Municipal Harbor Facility Grant Fund. And in this fund, the legislature would be allowed to appropriate dollars into the fund from whatever source it sees fit. But we've spelled out in the bill the watercraft fuel tax account, which comes from the marine fuel tax. And this is where the CS change is on page 1, lines 9 through 11. It also would allow us to take appropriations from the fisheries business tax revenue from the unrestricted portion. In other words, after the municipalities have been taken care of in their sharing program out of that revenue. In the bill, DOT is established as the agency which would administer grants from the fund. And the bill spells out eligibility criteria for grant applications. First of all, it has to be for capital improvement projects, not for preventive maintenance. As I said before, it's a 50-50 matching grant program. Municipalities would have to demonstrate that they have adequate insurance for their harbor facilities and that they have a preventive maintenance plan in place. The bill then goes on to specify some criteria for the award of grants, and the intent is to prioritize repair and major maintenance, not new projects, although at a certain time in the future, once a lot of the deferred maintenance needs have been taken care of, new projects could be considered eligible for grants under this program. And the bill goes further to limit that only a harbor may only receive one grant per year, and the grants are capped at $5 million. Municipalities must demonstrate their ability to operate independent of state aid in the future. Further criteria for the award of grants include public safety needs, the amount spent by the municipality on maintenance of the harbor. DOT may make changes, suggestions to the grant applications and in awarding the grants if approved, if they're agreed upon by the municipalities, changes may be made by DOT. And finally, the effective date is July 1, 2006. I'll take any questions from the committee. I know we have some folks from the Harbor Masters Association that want to give a presentation as well.
Representative Ledoux.
This appears to provide a mechanism. Is there any money attached to this?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that would be an accurate assessment. It's a mechanism, and the legislature can make appropriations to it as the larger body sees fit. We've specified in here that the legislature may make appropriations from the fisheries business tax and the watercraft tax account, marine fuel tax, but certainly other methods of capitalizing the fund could be used.
So that's why it's got a zero fiscal note, because it doesn't actually have any money with it.
At this time, you're correct, Representative.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair. Ian, I would imagine that just about every harbor facility in the state of Alaska would want to go for some money involved in this. Do you have any idea how much money we're talking about on this? I mean, there would probably be a lot of competition. Is there any guidelines set on how this money would go to municipalities or harbors, or how do they provide for who needs it the most? Is there a committee that looks at that, or how is that looked at?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I believe in your packet there's a chart that it's a list of the existing identified deferred maintenance needs, and this will give you an idea that the Harbor Masters Association has kind of worked with all of its members to develop that, and along with DOT. Yes, that's the list, and you can see that the needs are considerable, and obviously, the legislature, if it wants to address the deferred maintenance needs, will have to find some significant sources of revenue for this fund. I think, as you can see, that the dates on the bill of sale are listed in there. It's not necessary to prioritize, by order of when the harbors were transferred, because DOT has the ability to assess what are the most pressing needs, and they're not necessarily related to the date of transfer. They'll have to be able to take a look on a case-by-case basis what the needs are.
Thank you. So this again, as Representative Ledoux pointed out, just to clarify it, just provides a mechanism for the communities to try and come to the legislative body to get funding to support their harbors.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Newman, it's just a mechanism, and again, it's, you know, the intent here is that the municipalities have to come up with their share, and it's a 50-50 program, pretty reasonable approach to start off with.
Representative Sisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Have you identified some ways that you could get some funding in this without state revenues?
Through the chair, Representative Sisman, for certain harbor projects, there are federal dollars available. But I think that's another element in this is if you have X amount of dollars you're going to need for a project for any municipal harbor, we can do something where basically we're all three levels of government are contributing through this program on the 50-50, and then with that, further federal funding can be leveraged to take care of some of the needs. But I think some of the harbor masters folks can probably speak more specifically about that. As far as state doing it without state funds, I guess it would be like asking municipalities to do everything else without state funds too. It's the idea is kind of a shared responsibility.
Paula?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I was sort of getting at was whether or not this is a mechanism that you need in place in order to start something else. I mean, could you do it independent anyway?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Sisna, yeah, there are certain harbors that have just received one-time, appropriations in the capital budget for harbor projects. I think that the idea here is that we're trying to take a big picture look at this and say that, you know, coast-wide we have issues, and they're more or less very similar in a lot of the communities if you're looking at harbors that are falling apart. And so to do it where each community has to go through the entire appropriation process and kind of fight for themselves is one way to do it, but this is a comprehensive way to look at it.
Okay.
I think it's a better approach.
Thank you. Thank you.
Any further questions? I think at this point in time we'll go on.
I have a conceptual amendment I think we should move before we go on, and I hand it out to the committee members, and it's for the people on the...
Is there anybody opposed?
Just for question.
Sure. Representative Newman.
Thank you. And I certainly don't oppose this, but just I want to talk about it. Is it seems like after, that it's telling the municipality how they should spend their funds, it seems like. I think if they could get money one way or another, if a community decides that they want to use some state money that they may have to try and put towards their grant, I think this maybe puts a restriction on that. I don't know. I guess it can be seen as kind of a double dipping but type of a thing, but I don't see it as that, but more of a local control thing. If they want to get their money from the state through, if they have a municipal revenue sharing program, whatever the case may be, they could do whatever they want to do.
Yeah, for the benefit of the people on the off net here, what the conceptual amendment does on page 2, line 17, after the word grant, we add state funds shall not be used by a municipality as their matching funds for grants under this program. And speaking to the amendment, the reason was exactly what you're saying, looking at a double dip. We're trying to make the municipalities make an effort to put their own monies forward on this. Otherwise, the state would be paying 100% again for maintenance, and we're just trying to help them, have a little pride in their harbors.
Just to ensure that they're putting their own money
exactly.
In, period.
Otherwise, they can come back to each of the members here to get general fund money, and we put it back there, so we actually end up funding the whole project again with the state monies.
Mr. Chair, I withdraw my objection.
Is there any opposition to the conceptual amendment? Okay. We're going to go to Seward right now. Scott Ransom, please state your name and affiliation.
Yeah, good morning. Scott Ransom, City of Seward, Harbor Master here in Seward. I won't take much time because I know the members of our association are probably there to testify, but I'll just briefly say that our city council and the City of Seward have certainly support this. We passed a resolution recently, I'm sure as part of the packet. Just us alone, I know we're looking at over $6 million in deferred maintenance for our original floats from 64. We have made every effort here to take care of our harbor. We have new floats that we've funded to put in. But I should also say that we have increased our rates. We've already had two rate increases plus a passenger fee increase as a means of taking care of our facility. That said, I'll certainly appreciate the opportunity and totally support what this committee and our association is trying to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ransom. Any questions for Mr. Ransom? We'll move on to Valdez, Alan Sorum. Please state your name and affiliation.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Alan Sorum, the Port Director, Harbor Master for the City of Valdez, and immediate past president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I became very involved with the issues of deferred maintenance and harbor transfers during my 2 years as president of the association. John Stone's going to get on in a little while, and I've had a chance to review his comments, and I would certainly support them. There have been many of our communities supporting efforts to establish this fund in cooperation with the Department of Transportation, and it was meant to be a partnership. We have a good relationship with the Department of Transportation, and I think it would be a good mechanism to bring these communities in. My impression has been that many communities have just been overwhelmed with the prospect of repairing their facilities. There's been no maintenance funding for the state-owned harbors reaching back many years, and renovation of these facilities represents a major undertaking. I think it took a few years for many communities to realize the scope and magnitude of what they needed to do to restore these important facilities. The other factor that has been an issue is the increased cost of construction. The increased costs that build each year have made it that much more difficult to fund harbor reconstruction projects at the local level. Harbors represent a valuable and important transportation link for our coastal communities. Tourism, commercial and recreational fishing, subsistence gathering and hunting all depend on community harbors. Harbors and small ports are major economic engines in our communities, and I would encourage your support for House Bill 478, and I appreciate the chance to testify.
Well, thank you, Mr. Sorum. Any questions for Mr. Sorum? John Holst.
Good morning. This is John Holst from Sitka. I am a member of the Assembly for the City and Borough of Sitka, and I'm speaking on the behalf of the Assembly today on this issue. This is a good bill, provides a vehicle to get some funding to local municipalities who have just huge backlogs of maintenance, deferred maintenance. We're in the process of designing a rebuild of Old Thompson Harbor here. And that's going to begin in the summertime. That's a $6.7 million project, and when that's completed, hopefully in about a year, we're going to have to move on to the NB Harbor because that is deteriorated to the point where it must be replaced or done away with. And so we've got a couple of major projects. Our Ports and Harbors Commission have already recommended a 25-cent per foot increase each year for the next 5 years, which will have the impact of nearly doubling our moorage rates. This is going to be a terrible problem for much of our fishing fleet. And, of course, Sitka has one of the largest small boat fishing fleets, trollers and also others, but trollers predominantly on the coast. And it will be a real burden on the fishing industry, especially the crisis that they've gone through in the past 5 years. What's going to happen, we're afraid, is that the moorage fees, because we are still lower than moorage fees down south, if we increase them too fast, we will chase away some of our local fishermen and start making a price in them out of it. At the same time, we will have people from down south who who are used to paying considerably more will start to pick up some of these open slots. And since we have this huge waiting list, it could have the impact of displacing our fishing fleet by boats from down south. And that's a huge, huge long-term problem for us, and we'd certainly not want to see that. This bill will help us to be able to pay for some of these capital improvements and have some help in it. We're not asking for outright grants and pay for the whole thing. We're prepared we've taken the harbors over, we're prepared to replace them and repair them, but we sure could use some help. And if we don't receive help, it's going to be a real struggle borne by our fishermen. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Holtz. Any questions for Mr. Holtz? Marty Owen, Kodiak.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. Say, I've been asked to talk about the economic benefits of harbors across the state. And so I guess if I were in the legislature, I would want to ask, so why is it important to keep Alaska's harbor infrastructure modern and in good condition? For coastal communities, harbors are like economic lifeboats. Let me explain that. A very high percentage of the wealth in a coastal community is initially created by harbor users, primarily by commercial fishermen and tourism-related businesses. They are the economic foundation for almost every business because their new dollars are spent over and over. Grocers, mechanics, shopkeepers, fuel distributors, restaurant and bar owners, almost every business person in town depends upon the wealth initially created at or in support of the harbor. Without modern docks and floats, businesses and fishing can't grow. Economic activity stagnates and populations decline. A vibrant harbor infrastructure is an economic lifeboat, and we must keep our lifeboats in good condition or we will meet the same fate the passengers of the Titanic did. So you might ask, so what's wrong? Your harbor's a little bit older. Well, here's a couple things to consider. Most of Alaska's harbors were built over 25 years ago. Since then, the fleets have gotten longer, heavier, and wider. Now, I'm talking about the boats, not the fishermen. For example, the average fishing boat in the 60s was 35, 38 feet long. Today's seiners, to be economically viable, and there are in the 50-foot and larger category. A lot of them are limit seiners at 56 feet. To remain competitive in a global seafood market, commercial fishermen upgraded their vessels. But unfortunately, our harbors have not kept pace. When harbor floats are replaced today, the new slips are longer, stronger, and wider, without exception. And that's what it takes to accommodate today's modern fleet. Additionally, the new boats have an appetite for shore power that has outstripped the utility system. These old dock distribution systems are inadequate, unsafe, and out of code compliance. Well, you might say, why don't we just put some new wiring out there? Let's think about that. Does it make sense to spend millions for new electric systems on floats built the last 25 years that are now 30 years old? I think you might agree that that really doesn't make much sense. So what about the future? How have and how will the various rationalization schemes impact harbor use and development? To some degree, the fleets have consolidated, and more seems inevitable. But fishing isn't going away. Salmon prices are recovering, and prices of other species like halibut, pollock, and cod are strong. The future is certainly different, but it's still bright. Alaska needs to support and sustain the fleet as it matures. Currently, we're going through a major adjustment period, but state and local government can help by supporting harbors to meet the needs of the modern fleet and thus stabilize our coastal economies. Let me provide an example based upon the community I know best, Kodiak. Just a few years ago, DOT offered Kodiak $7.5 million and the deed to its two harbors. It was the only offer we got, and it certainly was better than nothing. With that money, we replaced the smaller and older of our two harbors. It was 40 years old, having been built by the state right after the 64 tsunami. Our other harbor, a mere 20 years old at the time, was also nearing the end of its useful life, and now is over 25 years old. It's going to cost us $14 million to replace it. For many years, Kodiak's mortgage fees were some of the highest in the state, but they barely covered operating and maintenance costs. Nothing was left over to set aside for major replacement projects. Since Kodiak accepted ownership of the harbors, mortgage rates have increased three times, and two more increases have been authorized by the City Council. For the larger vessels, the annual mortgage rate over a five-year period climbs from $25 per foot per year to nearly $100 per foot per year.
Mr. Owen?
That's a 400%.
Mr. Owen? I wonder if you could please wrap it up and possibly fax us your written testimony. We have a few more people that are signed up to testimony, and we're rapidly running out of time.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
I just want to say, let's not waste any more time. This 50-50 matching program that your bill creates will help communities build lifeboats before they hit an iceberg. This is the bill. This bill is not a state giveaway. It puts plenty of financial responsibility on local governments, too. It's a good concept, and I think it'll be good for the economy of all Alaska. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Owen. Any questions for Mr. Owen? Jim Stromdahl, please state your name and affiliation.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members of the House Committee on Regional Affairs, my name is Jim Stromdahl. I'm the harbor master for the ports and harbors of the city of Petersburg. I'm testifying today in favor of House Bill 478, and I wish to speak briefly on the city matching grant fund. Since Petersburg has taken over ownership of our three harbors, we have had to raise the harbor rates 50 to 70% to our stallholders, with an additional 10% in 2007 and another 10% in 2008. Also, the City Council has allocated a portion of the raw fish tax coming to Petersburg to the harbor. With these raw fish tax monies and the increase in the harbor revenues by our rate increases, this is how we plan to provide our 50% of the matching grants. Petersburg recognizes how vital the harbors are to the community economics, from commercial fishing, charter boats, and tourism. This funding will be greatly helped in keeping our harbors in operational conditions in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stromdahl. Any questions for Mr. Stromdahl? Last person off-net is Lisa Von Bargen. Please state your name and affiliation again for the record.
Hi, Lisa has left.
Oh, okay. Well, that was easy.
Thanks.
That closes out the off-net testimony. I think we'll go to the room now, and we'll start out with John Stone. Good morning.
Good morning. Co-chairs Thomas Olson and members of the committee, my name is John Stone, and I am the president of the Alaska Association of Harbor Masters and Port Administrators. I have extensive written comments that I have submitted to your staffs, and I will allow you to read them at your own pleasure, and I will keep my comments very short and then be available for questions. The Alaska Association of Harbor Masters represents 27 harbor systems throughout the state. There's a list of those in my comments. Obviously, we're in strong support of this bill. We've spent considerable amount of time thinking about a matching fund approach to this problem, and we believe it will help us out greatly and fulfill the original intent of the harbor transfers, whereby municipalities would become responsible for those harbors and be able to maintain them over the long run. So that's basically what I'm here to say. We're in strong support, and I will take questions.
No questions?
Thank you.
Oh, you got off easy. Thank you very much.
I've been dealing with them for a year.
John McKinnon. I'm going to ask you to limit your testimony to 30 minutes, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, John McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Transportation for Highways and public facilities, and that includes floats and boat harbors in the state. I will be very brief. You've heard a lot of good testimony in support of this legislation, and I think it's a great piece. That one of the points that I'd like to make is that the use of the marine fuel tax and the fisheries business tax money creates a connection to almost like a user fee for it. I think that's a very appropriate use of those money as opposed to unconnected funds right out of the general fund. I have with me Vic Winters, the State Harbors Engineer, and we're just here to answer whatever questions you might have.
Any questions for Mr. McKinnon? Two in a row. You got off easy, John. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else in the room that would care to testify on this? Well, I guess that closes it out and brings it back to the committee. Co-Chair Thomas, I'm sure you have something to...
I just want to thank the Harbor Master Association, DOT, Peggy Wilson, Senator Stedman for helping us put this together. It's taken us a year to get this far, and I think by identifying the funds we had, it actually goes back to the people who paid into it, and that's the marine fuel tax and the raw fish tax that the users put into that. So, and that's why there's a zero fiscal note, because the legislature may, because we can't tell them to give back the $10 million or more that we would be, that we're paying into this. So this is a good bill. We've worked hard on it and appreciate everybody's support and people who helped us put this together. I can't move my own bills, so.
What are the wishes of the county?
Chair, I move CS for House Bill 478, version 24, LS 1694 /G from committee.
As amended.
As amended.
And with attached fiscal notes?
And attached fiscal notes.
Any opposition? The bill is moved out of committee. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.